Download complete in 3, 2, 1. News Talk Radio, CFRB 1010.
D-Ball!
Strange days.
Everybody's smoking, and no one's getting high. Everybody's flying, and never touch the sky. There's UFOs over New York, and I ain't too surprised.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Strange days indeed. Most peculiar, mama. Roll!
Good evening. My name is Errol Brusnap. Welcome to listeners here to the Big Stick in Toronto, around the world via the Surfer Network or Windows Media Player, and on 60-70 kilohertz in the 49-meter band, shortwave to Strange Days Indeed, the 130th program about the increasingly intriguing phenomena of UFOs, unidentified flying objects. And tonight on Strange Days Indeed, a tiny flying alien spotted in Turkey. NASA pressed to photograph Mars anomalies. And UFO Roundup's Joe Trainer is calling it his final UFO Roundup. And a flying triangle over South Carolina with a helicopter escort. We'll have those and other stories tonight, along with regulars Victor Vigiani, Steve Bassett, Richard Hall, Royce J. Myers the third, he got promoted, and Dave Furlot. And our 11 o'clock feature tonight is a panel discussion. It should be an interesting one with Steve Bassett, Richard Hall, and Royce J. Myers. And moving things around a little tonight, Dave Furlot will join us probably just after midnight here on Strange Days Indeed, the program that looks at the phenomena of UFOs. Let's get things rolling with the latest UFO-related news and updates. I don't know why that laser printer out in the newsroom doesn't print every last letter on every last line. I wrote it, but when I come to read it, I miss T's and things off the end of words. UFOs are observed in space and on Earth in New York City, New Jersey, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Ohio, Oregon, California, up here in Canada, and across in England. Actually, an interesting photograph appeared on George Files' website this past week. A man out taking some photographs, took them home, developed them, or put them up on his computer, and noticed that there was a strange little thing. And that's all you can really call it, is a little thing in one of the photographs. And people are looking at that. But methinks it's too small, and even when you blow it up real good, you can't really tell what it is. But it'd be interesting to hear if anything comes out of that. I think that was in down Kitchener way this past week. But in a field in Turkey, which was sealed off on Tuesday last by police, which happened after a villager claimed he saw a 2-foot-tall flying alien in a yellow suit. Now, according to Ananova.com, Fezzi Cam, his wife and another woman, said that they spotted the being on Monday morning as they rode on a tractor to a tobacco field. A Turkish tobacco. Mr. Cam said he threw stones at the creature. That's a nice way to greet a little tiny 2-foot alien dressed in yellow. Threw stones at him. Yeah. Yellow-gray outfit it was wearing with a yellow light on the front. Yeah, right. Regional Governor Ian Chevik reportedly ordered police to protect the field near Narli in Usak province. Despite having doubts about the claim, he said, "We have more important matters to deal with, but we have no other choice. The area is being protected, and we are waiting for the scientists." A team from Sirius, a Turkish UFO group, is on its way to the scene. It'll check radiation levels and analyze the soil. Two other villagers claim to have seen lights in the area at the same time as Mr. Cam saw the little being. He described it as just over 2 feet tall, with a wide, round head and wide eyes. Wouldn't you have wide eyes if Turkish people suddenly started throwing stones at you? probably. He said, I thought it didn't have wings or a propeller, but it could fly upward. Yeah, handy for getting out of the way of stones that the local people are throwing at you. Kurt Jonick, the Electric Warrior, reports today, Saturday, that in a letter to NASA, a space exploration activist group presented a list of anomalous formations on the face of Mars, on the surface of Mars, which they believe provide compelling evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence. Now, remember, we talked about this last week and the week before. Last March, FACETS, the Formal Action Committee for Extraterrestrial Studies, gave NASA a legal ultimatum to rephotograph the notorious face on Mars. And NASA responded in April by pointing the Mars Global Surveyor's onboard camera at the famous Martian landform, finally making the new image publicly available on the Internet late last month. NASA's chief scientist for Mars exploration told MSNBC that if he has his way, another image of the face will be taken this month. We do want to be responsive to all taxpayers, said Jim Garvin. In their response to the FACETS legal demand, NASA agreed to photograph up to five more images during the MGS extended mission period, which started in February. Perhaps this is a turning point in the space agency's treatment of the artificiality hypothesis, says FACETS director David Jinks. Topping FACETS' list of weird Martian features, it says here, weird Martian features, is the D&M pyramid, which was partially imaged by NASA in 1998. The landform is described as having triangular faces, a well-defined apex, symmetrical sides, and a straight base. Speculation casts the D&M pyramid as a five-sided pyramid, which, along with the face, is among the most closely scrutinized anomalies on Mars. FACETS retains the services of CAUSE attorney Peter Gersten, who wrote the follow-up letter to NASA's Edward Wheeler. Well, I'm going to skip this next one because it's a couple of pages long and we need to take a break in a couple of minutes. We don't need to take a couple, so I'll read the couple of pages long one. Now, Joe Traynor, you've heard his name mentioned ever since the beginning of this program, 138 weeks ago. Joe Traynor publishes UFO Roundup, and we get a lot of the news items that we read on the UFO Update segment of this program from Joe Traynor's UFO Roundup. An electronic email newsletter. Well, Joe put this out this week. He said he intended to post this announcement in last week's issue, and unfortunately, due to illness, there was no issue last week, nor are there likely to be any new issues during the course of the summer, and here's why. Shortly after Joseph Traynor moved to Minnesota 2 years ago, he went to the Pearle Vision Center for new glasses, where he was told by the staff optometrist that he had cataracts. Now, during the past 25 months, the condition has been steadily growing worse. And like Charles Fort, he's now blind in one eye and the other one is getting progressively worse. So for the past 6 months, he's been resorting to all kinds of ingenious stratagems in a determined, some would say undoubtedly fanatical effort to get the UFO Roundup out every week. But now, unfortunately, he can no longer do the work of compiling, writing, and editing. Last week, he lost the ability to read his own transcription notes. Yeah, apparently that's quite a handicap for an editor to have. So he mentioned this in an email to his sister Maureen, who replied, "Welcome to the club. Nobody else can read your handwriting either." So he said he must have laughed out loud for 5 minutes after that. That must have made him feel better, too. So much as Joe hates to go, he has no choice but to put UFO Roundup on hiatus while he undergoes medical treatment for the cataracts. I underwent medical treatment for a Cadillac once, but that's another story. Joe hopes to resume publication later this year, but we'll wait and see what the doctor says, Joe says. He's actually quite sorry that he has to suspend publication, and so are a lot of people out there in the UFO world. Joe supplies a really magnificent service with his UFO Roundups email newsletter, and a lot of people are going to miss that, and we're down to Filer's Files now. So, Joe, I hope everything works out for you. Hope the vision comes back well. We look forward to next issues of UFO Roundup. Strange days indeed. When we come back, we will continue on with some interesting stuff that's been going on in the UFO world. Victor Vigiani will join us after the news break at 10:30 at the bottom of the hour. Strange days indeed on News Talk Radio, CFRB, 1010.
Agent Court Infinity Nissan brings you the all-new Q45 for 2002, a new class in performance luxury sedans. With a 4.5-liter V8 340-horsepower engine that gets you from 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 5.9 seconds, voice recognition system, 18-inch alloy wheels, multi-lens xenon headlights, and 5-speed automatic transmission with manual shift. Experience the 2002 Q45 at Agent Court Infinity Nissan, 1871 McCowan Road in Scarborough. Quality at a fair price.
Gary, I've been asking around.
Yeah?
Well, people say you've got the oldest computer on the floor.
Yeah, this thing, the Beige Beast 386 processor. Really slow, heats up like you wouldn't believe.
Perfect.
Why?
I've got waffle batter.
You could fight smog by living at work. Or you could join Pollution Probe's Clean Air Commute 2001, June 25th to the 29th. Visit pollutionprobe.org.
See the grill in the monitor?
Yeah.
Leaves perfect ridges for syrup.
A message from the station that cares. CFRB 1010.
Now is the time to surrender to a sensational season of 14 great productions at the Stratford Festival of Canada. Give in to a sumptuous production of The Sound of Music. The Toronto Sun says it deserves a thunderous ovation. And there's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? The Ottawa Citizen says it's a stunning production with powerhouse acting. And don't miss Twelfth Night. The National Post calls it a night to remember. The season has begun, and we have your seats. Call 1-800-567-1600 or visit stratfordfestival.ca.
Strange Days Indeed is the name of the program. We look at the phenomena that surround UFOs, and boy, we'll be doing that one way or another tonight. After the 11 o'clock news, we will put our panel together. We will go to various parts of the continent. Royce J. Myers will join us down across there in Oregon. We will go down to Maryland, where Richard Hall lives, and Washington, D.C., where Stephen Bassett is based, the only UFO lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and we will have a panel discussion about, among other things, the disclosure project that happened, the disclosure press conference that happened about 3 weeks ago down there in Washington. Should be an interesting discussion for an hour or so, pro and con. Based on some of the email that's been going around, I should say it would be a very interesting discussion, pro and con, but we'll see. I don't want to anticipate too much. Continuing on with the UFO stuff in the news, as far as the UFO world is concerned, Tom Sheets, the state director of MUFON, Georgia, reports that on May 6th, at about 11:15, a licensed security officer was outside on the back deck along with a friend when they noticed several aircraft off to the south about 3 miles away over Myrtle Beach in South Carolina. The aircraft continued to approach their location from the northeast until they were about 5,000 feet away and at a fairly low altitude. The witnesses then identified three of them as helicopters by engine noise, shape, and lighting, and noticed that they'd formed into a triangular-shaped formation. The witnesses could also make out a dark triangular object within the triangular formation of escorting helicopters. The size of the unlit dark triangular craft was estimated as larger than a DC-8, but smaller than a 747, which has a 196-foot wingspan and a length of about 231 feet. Now, a fourth helicopter was trailing along between 200 and 500 yards behind. The witness had a relatively good 5-minute view of this flyover. The primary witness attempted to get a camera, but was unable to fire off a photo. He indicated that the Navy Air Force installations at Charleston, South Carolina, about 75 miles south, while Shaw Air Force Base is 80-plus miles to the west of him. In a recent and much smaller triangular object that had been spotted, it was observed at a nearby beach with a blue haze below the craft, and the primary witness there was a graduate of military flight school, and the secondary witness was a U.S. Air Force dependent. Now, the case was referred to South Carolina MUFON for additional local investigation. And there is another case of a dark triangle seemingly escorted by helicopters within a reasonable distance of an Air Force base. And indeed, that's what it is. Our thanks to Tom Sheets, who's the state director of MUFON of Georgia, for that report. And William E. Ristow reports that on the night of May 5th, he was practicing satellite observation in preparation for joining the PROVE group. And he'd missed the first two satellites on his heavens above schedule, but was keeping his eyes open with the help of a good pair of binoculars for anything that was moving in the sky. And suddenly from the southwest appeared to be an unscheduled satellite that was high and bright. No one or two people like that. He followed it with his binoculars as he approached the zenith. Ristow must have blinked because he says he didn't see its 90-degree left turn to the northwest. He continued to follow it with his binoculars when he spotted another object headed northwest as if it were trying to catch up with the first one. It advanced until it and the first object were both in his binocular field of view. And then from a direction opposite to the first two objects came another, somewhat dimmer and smaller light traveling very fast. Ristow followed it to the southeast until it disappeared. He returned to locate the two original objects. In only 10 seconds had elapsed, but they had disappeared. Ristow says with chills up his spine, he prepared to watch for the next scheduled satellite due overhead at 21:45. It showed up on time with no company. A night, he said, he won't forget, and there have been several of those based around UFO sightings over the years, thanks to Jeff Challender and George Filer's files for that report. Stuff coming up on TV this week that you may be interested in seeing. Tomorrow at 4 p.m., Space Channel recently has been running interesting stuff to those of us who are interested in UFOs. Tomorrow they're running Close Encounters, Proof of Alien Contact. And to be honest with you, there are so many darn UFO documentaries around now that I can't remember what I've seen and what I haven't until I actually sit down and watch the opening and go, did I see this or not? Find out tomorrow, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Space Channel. And TLC also tomorrow, but at 8 p.m., offers up the ultimate 10 phenomena that defy explanation. And that one I've seen before, and there are a couple of items in there that I know will be of interest to you tomorrow night, TLC at 8 p.m. And on Thursday, also on TLC, but at 7 p.m., TLC is running Secrets of the Bermuda Triangle. I don't know whether you want to watch that stuff again or not, but it's there for you on TLC. Not exactly an exciting week of reruns for the ufologically inclined, but something worth watching in case you missed them. Have a tape rolling in case you did, and then you'll have it in your archive. Hey, now, and there was an interesting, I got a moment for this. There was an interesting, in West Hampton Beach, an apparent formation of 5 to 6 lights were observed traveling southwest to southeast. This is New York City, through a breaking cloud cover on May 19th at around 10:30 p.m. The lights may have been part of one oval unit, George Filer says. Within 10 seconds, the same formation of lights reversed direction and were seen traveling from northeast to southwest. They were now higher in the sky, traveling east of the first sighting. Yeah. All these reports are vague. It would be really nice if we had some sort of Air Force support or fast plane to just, you know, go along and check things out. Yeah. Well, but we don't. Maybe one day that will happen for us. And in Albany, New Albany, actually, in New York City, a witness reports that he's been seeing almost every night a bright moving object similar to an arc welder's bright blue light that doesn't twinkle when it shows up in the warm months. On May 22nd of this year, the lights appeared 4 times in a single night. They appear as a satellite at times and disappear. The object apparently has also appeared at about 15 degrees directly south of its zenith at 9:34 on May the 18th. The object moved directly north very slowly after turning a very dim orange in color. It was very bright, about three times the size of the planet Jupiter at its brightest. And after 10 to 15 seconds of glowing, it dims very rapidly to that dim orange color and starts moving off very slowly, but faster when it was brightly lit up. Thanks to Peter Davenport, the director of the National UFO Reporting Center over there in Washington. I got time for one more, Dean? Good. And in New Jersey, apparently a video was taken on Sunday, June 3rd, of a strange-looking aircraft flying over the Atlantic Ocean at around 4 p.m. A brilliant light was first observed in the sky at 45 degrees above the horizon. The flash of light was most likely caused by a reflection of the sun on a flying object. Well, that makes sense. But the witness says it caught his attention. Within seconds, the brightly lit disc-like object disappeared, as they always do. A short time later, moving at high speed and faster than normal, air traffic was a white aircraft traveling north, paralleling the New Jersey coastline. There were no contrails. Caught on videotape. Of course, we never get to see any of that stuff, and never seem to be any follow-up reports, but they're intriguing reports nonetheless. Victor Vigiani is with us, the regular columnist on this program. He has a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology and psych. And until last year, he was a principal of a school in the Toronto area. And as you can tell, he's happily retired, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to the golf course for 5. So,
pardon me while I yawn for a second. Hang on.
Oh, go right ahead. I'll talk to Cindy while I'm waiting for you.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How's you?
Just fine.
Interesting. Did you hear the show last week?
Actually, no. We were away for a wedding out of the city winter last week. Discussion we had this afternoon, I understand you had some educational people on last week.
Well, they were. Mm-hmm. They were. Both teachers both got fired for their UFO activities mm-hmm. on the web.
I find
just
that
bizarre.
Wow, extremely bizarre. Whoa. And you know what it does for me, Errol?
What does it do for you,
it
Victor?
It takes me back to that movie, Inherit the Wind.
Oh.
Remember that movie, Inherit the Wind?
Vaguely.
Yeah, well, the one that portrayed the dialogue between the evolutionist and the creationist dialogue in the courtroom.
Oh, of course. Yeah, the Scopes Monkey Trial.
That's right.
There you go.
Monkey Trial, right. Produced by one Stanley Kramer. And that movie, I think, really typifies the tip of the iceberg that I guess you guys got at last week with respect to these individuals who brought forward a point of view of reality that just doesn't fit with the preconceived ideas of what we should be teaching in our school system today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it can be sort of, I guess, argued that the film in a way portrayed it in a very prosaic way, but I think that the whole issue of what really was the crux of what happened in that Scopes trial with respect to the creationists and the evolutionists really points to the things that you and your guests and myself and you and I and everyone on the program talk about every week here on the radio. And I just think it's an absolutely fascinating parallel.
Mm-hmm. Well, they weren't teaching so much in the classroom. What they were doing was the guy from Upper New York State, Plattsburgh, I think it was he was from.
Their association with it.
Well, no, you know, he was at the Bill Clinton Community College down there in Plattsburgh, and he had on the Community College's web server had a website about UFOs, and it had been there for quite a while. And then a new principal came in and canned his bum out of there.
You can't
because
do that,
of his website.
Yeah.
And then Alfred Lemberg was a supply teacher down there in Alabama, the land of the free.
and they comfortably restricted.
Right, and they comfortably restricted, and they didn't like his website at all. And he was using that to illustrate, you know, art and English, and part of his website was to do with UFOs, and that's why they both got fired.
That's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, I can identify with the individuals that you talk about, because for many, many, many years, as you know, I've been investigating. You and I have been working at this for, at least you and I together, for at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as an employee of a school board that may or may not have supported my particular views on this, if you went to the front lines, they probably wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that remains a bit of a sensitive nerve, and I mm-hmm. don't think that many formal institutions in our society would want to come forward and support an individual who has what someone might call, you know, marginal views on reality.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're really talking about here, to move it to a different level.
But then on the other hand, you were telling me today,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm,
yes,
that you're going to be teaching a course in adult education?
That's right. I've got an opportunity to do something with the Peel Board of Education in their adult education department, and beginning late September, September 26th,
mm-hmm.
I have an opportunity to teach a course in adult ed on UFOs.
Oh, I've good.
Put, yeah, I mm-hmm. submitted a program synopsis of I think it's about 8 to 10 weeks. I'm not exactly sure. I think it's about 8 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and individuals can register for the course. And I've submitted a course proposal, and let's hope that individuals here in the Mississauga area and anyone else in the environs who want to come down and register for the course can team up with me, and we can both discover the phenomenon of UFOs together.
Do you have the address and numbers for that, Victor?
Well, right now...
Or is that an unfair question at this point?
Right now, it's what I did today was I checked out the Peel Board site, and what all they've got listed at this point is mm-hmm. their spring and summer courses.
Right.
They don't yet put out the fall courses. I think they'll probably do that in the beginning of July. That's right.
Yeah.
Late July, beginning of August.
Uh-huh.
And people will be able to register for the courses at that time, and I guess towards that period of time, and maybe on the show we can put forward the
absolutely. Cindy has been waiting a very long time here. Cindy up there in Bramley, are you there, Cindy?
I'm still here.
Yes, well, you're on the radio, Cindy. Welcome
to
Strange Days.
Is this the host I'm talking to,
Errol? Yes, it is.
Oh, good. I enjoy your program. I listen to it every Saturday evenings.
You know, I'd love to listen to this program every Saturday,
it used to be
too.
On Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading a lot of books on the UFO encounters, you know.
Right.
Can I just mention this one? Have you heard of him, this one writer? Raymond E. Fowler?
Yes, of
Watchers.
Course. Watchers? Yes, the Watchers.
And I'm reading his other on Facebook, The Andreessen Affair, Betty. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's just incredible. It's a fascinating read. Do you know anything about the two books and the writer?
I've read the books.
25 years experience.
Yes. Well, I'm sure that Victor's read the books, too.
Oh, for sure. The Fowler book, yeah. Right.
And actually, Ray is someone I want to get on this program eventually.
Have you had him on the program? Mm-hmm. Have you ever met him? He goes on all the radio programs, TV. He writes to the magazines.
Yeah. Yes. No, I haven't met him. Haven't had him on the program. Want to have him on.
What do you find
encounters this woman has had, the Betty entry.
Yeah, what
she's
do you
had
find
sightings
most...
and encounters.
Cindy, we have to talk sometimes, okay?
So, yeah.
Victor, go ahead.
No, I just want to ask what she finds most fascinating about Fowler's work.
You still talking to me?
Yeah, what do you find most interesting about Ray Fowler's work?
Oh, he just knows so much about the UFO experience, you know, the encounters, the sightings. Mm-hmm. And he's really gotten to know this Betty, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whole case on her, you know? She's been to the... had hypnosis and everything, regression.
Yeah, it's actually, her story is quite remarkable.
It's an incredible story. I can't put it down. Mm. It's just fascinating.
Now,
she draws all these pictures in the book of when she goes back to the flashbacks,
mm-hmm.
when she was encountered, abductions when she was 13.
Yes.
When she's in the hypnosis, regression, she can even draw pictures of what it was like, but they look like the aliens and everything. It's just amazing.
Yeah, now,
her encounters.
Did you pick those books up at
the library.
At the library.
She said mm-hmm. they've done some implants on her, operations.
Mm-hmm.
And she says they talked to her telepath. It's just fascinating. Read the pictures. I can't believe the stuff that's happened to her.
Yeah.
She said one time they just came into her home at night in the kitchen.
Yes. Cindy.
Amazing.
Thank you for your call. And
do you think you'd ever get him on?
It's a great idea, and I will do my utmost to do that, maybe in the next couple of weeks. Okay?
This is so interesting, this book.
Yeah. Okay.
You think you might be able to get them on sometime?
Yes, and maybe even Betty, if she's still up for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're down in the States.
Yes,
yeah.
I know. Yeah, I know where to get...
She used to go around with them and had the books out on her.
I know where to get a hold of her. Thanks for your call, Cindy.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Just want to mention those two books.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good night.
Thank you for my call.
I understand her excitement about it because they're pretty damn good books. Raymond E. Fowler, if you haven't read these books yet, interesting books on abduction.
Now, Ray does some fantastic work.
Yes.
I know the way he handled that whole Andreessen affair was extremely articulate.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of information in that book that would just fascinate the initial reader and even any individual who's been involved in abductions over the last several years.
Yeah, good 101 books.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a point of interest,
yes.
Carol, you asked for the website on that appeal board. If people want to follow up on it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I just got the website here. If they want to check out, I guess at some point, it's www.comed.ca, and that'll get them to the appeal board website, and they can check it out in terms of the kinds of things that will be offered probably late July and early August for them to register if they wish.
Okay, good. That's www.comed.ca.
That's right.
.ca.
That's right.
And that from there is a link to the appeal board website, or is that actually the appeal board website?
That's the appeal board website. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Mm. There, I made a mental note on paper. Also, while we're giving out addresses, and I want to give out the UFO reporting number from MUFON Ontario before we get into the too much excitement later. 905-278-9596.
On that particular telephone number, mm-hmm. I received a very interesting call yesterday, Errol, from an individual reporting a sighting this last Monday. He was headed along the Gardner on an eastbound track,
mm-hmm.
heading towards the 427 area, and he noticed moving from westbound,
mm-hmm.
he noticed three very tightly aligned lights moving sort of in a northwest track, and the lights were moving, and the lights slowed down a little bit, and one of the lights moved in an absolutely 90-degree angle from the other two lights off in a northerly direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sort of wondering if any other individual who might have been in that area at the time, if they are, they can call that number, and I would love to take their sighting report.
905-278-9596. 905-278-9596. Yeah, there was somebody, back in the early days of this program when we were on Sunday nights and probably back a couple of years ago now, there was a guy, I don't know if you remember this story, he was riding in the back of a cab past the CNE and saw a triangular-shaped object over the X. And this was, you know, this is not when the X was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And it wasn't those tub lights or the pot lights that are outside the new international center there or whatever.
I really can't tell you the number of people that I've spoken to who have been driving along that thoroughfare,
mm-hmm.
who have seen things move one way or another over the lake. Now, I don't want to put it down to anything specific, but a number of individuals have talked to me about that configuration of people of seeing lights moving one way or another over that area, and it's just a very strange kind of consistency to that, but
mm-hmm.
That's yet to be investigated. I don't want to put anything down specific on.
Well, there have been interesting stories over the years about all kinds of things going on out there. There's a woman out your way who mm-hmm. actually goes down to the lake fairly regularly and videos stuff down there.
The orbs over the lake.
Yeah, exactly. And also there have been reports of platforms coming down into the water. They're big rectangular platforms over the years, too. And sort of ongoing reports of platforms, not just, you know, the once or twice, but, yeah. Now, we have about 3 minutes left here.
Yeah.
I got an email here from Mike, who wondered if we could recommend some good UFO websites. Right off the top of your head. Ooh.
Well, where do we start?
Well, exactly.
Well, I think if anyone really wants to look at something that's really, I think, tangible and I think scholarly, if you want to use the word. I would really recommend that you take a look at the National Institute for Discovery Science website.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that I keep on frequenting,
mm-hmm.
simply because the number of articles that are written there have to do with UFOs and aerial phenomena in a way that I think are very scholarly written, and they're very incisive in the way that the individuals who write these columns investigate UFOs. And I don't want to put a label of a scientific analysis, because science sometimes tends to downplay the marginal aspect of the UFO phenomenon. But the individuals that do contribute to this website are very, very incisive in the way they look at it. And if anyone wants to begin their search, I would highly recommend they look at it.
Uh-huh.
And it's just very simple. It's just www.nidsci.org.
NIDSCI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
or NIDSCI, yeah.
Yeah, and it's I find it's one of the most clearly written. It's there's not too much there.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to move around in the site, and you can read it very easily. If you have Acrobat Reader, you can get to many of the documents that are there and kind of begin your search there. Now, there are a lot of other websites.
Well, what I intend to do is actually, you know, probably tomorrow is send Mike an email back with some URLs of links where, you know, I mean, the Mutual UFO Network of Ontario, MUFON Ontario's links page.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some good ones there. So, Mike, you can expect an email tomorrow. And quickly, just a reminder to Victor to put my book on his course curriculum from Palmiro Campania.
Ah, already.
Yeah. So Palmiro's listening there in Ottawa. I know John Terrific. Velez is down there in New York, and I know there are people over in England listening to this program every Sunday night. Victor, we have to bail out of here because we have to go down to the fashion bash that's happening down there at the Metro Convention Center and pick up the latest from Mark Stenabaugh down there.
Fashion bash.
Well, yeah, it's a big fashion ball for charity.
Isn't that
for a good cause. Yeah.
Well, it's been great talking with you, Errol, and we'll
Victor?
Chat with you soon.
Yes, we will talk again together. Thank you for this.
Okay.
Go to bed.
Okay. Good night.
Have several good rounds tomorrow. Good
Bye-bye.
Night. Joining us from various places on the continent, first of all, in Washington, D.C., is monthly correspondent Stephen G. Bassett, the only lobbyist registered to represent the interests of UFO ET research activist organizations in Washington, D.C. Steve, welcome to the program again.
Yes, nice to be with you, Earl.
Good to have you here. Also joining us from his home is Richard C. Hall. Now, Richard is one of the regular contributors also to this program. He's a legend in the serious study of UFO phenomena, a well-respected researcher amongst his peers, and one of the rock-solid, straight-down-the-middle-of-the-road participants in my email list, UFO Updates. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing fine.
Well, good. Okay, and let's go to the third member of this panel tonight, Royce J. Myers III. He's the webmaster of the UFO Watchdog. He has an educational and occupational background in law enforcement and criminalistics. Royce, welcome back to the program again.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you. Gentlemen, have you all met before, or is this your first time together?
I have met Richard, but I don't believe that I've met Royce.
And I've met nobody.
Now, that Steve was.
We know each other. We know each other by reputation and occasional contact.
Okay. I guess one of the things that I'm sure that at least a couple of you would like to talk about tonight is the Disclosure Project and what's been going on there. Very briefly, the Disclosure Project has been underway for a while, headed up by a former emergency surgery doctor, Stephen Greer. And they had a press conference. When was it, Stephen? What was
May the
date?
9th.
May the 9th in Washington, D.C. Caused quite a stir, especially in the UFO field for a variety of reasons. Richard, would you like to start it off? Well, somebody
okay,
has to.
Sure,
okay?
I'll be glad to start it off.
And since you're the senior member of the group here, go ahead.
I'll be glad to start it off. Mm-hmm. Stephen might not like what I say, but I have severe doubts about the entire approach and legitimacy of the so-called Disclosure Project. And I speak from, and I think all of us probably should state a little bit of our background and as we go along here, but I
sure, go ahead, Rick.
I was employed by Congressional Information Service for about 10 years, which is not a government agency, it's a private organization, but it covered Congress in all respects, and part of my daily fare was reading and studying what was going on in Congress, so I know a little bit about that. And I think the Disclosure Project is, well, okay, let me just sum it up in one word. It's a farce.
Hmm. Would you like to be more
specific? About the openers.
Yeah, okay. But when you say you think it's a farce, what causes you to come to that conclusion, Richard?
Studying the whole modus operandi of this group, how they go about it, the people they put forth, and I have to say that amongst their witnesses, UFO witnesses, they have some very good witnesses, some very solid people, but unfortunately they cloak that within a whole belief package of what's going on. They also have a political agenda, which we'll be getting into, and it's just no way is it going to get anywhere on Capitol Hill because of the way they're approaching it.
Mm-hmm. Stephen?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a response for Richard?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to mention that the best way to know what's going on in the Disclosure Project is the website, disclosureproject.org. It's recently been upgraded, and it's very well done. It's got an enormous amount of material, including an executive summary, the sample testimony from all of the the witnesses were presented at the press conference that day, including the videotaped version of witnesses, which I think 70, if I'm not mistaken. 21 were there in person. It has, and a lot of other items in terms of what people can do, what the president should do, what the Congress should do. It's just a very good site. So just as a baseline, if someone wants to know what happened, what's going on, that's where they go. There's also a link there mm-hmm. directly to the archived press conference itself, which was archived by Connect Live. It was a web broadcast and archive. From where I sit, as an activist and lobbyist, who's now been in it about 6 years, and putting myself in the position, and this is where I'm coming from now, not as a researcher.
Mm-hmm.
There are people in this field been researching it for 40 years, and naturally they're going to look at this from that perspective, from that background. It's unavoidable. That's fine. I'm looking at it from the activist point of view. I try to put myself in the position of a member of Congress or a member of the press, maybe even the average person in the street, as to in assessing anything, including this. And I don't know how they could have done a better job than what they did. They brought 21 people to town, good people, honest people. The witnesses were treated with respect by both the press and the staff. They built up a volunteer group, substantial number of people. The list of people that helped put this project on is on the website. It includes, I think, a lot of very, very, some well-known, certainly competent people. They put together a very good briefing document, 120 hours of videotape, condensed to 33, condensed to 18, a 500-page transcript of the 18-hour tape, a 4-hour edited, nicely edited but not overly produced videotape raising all the key points. The presentation to the press conference was professional. It was straightforward. Each of these witnesses got up, and the little bit of time they had, they made the key statements about their personal experience with this, and then stated before the press and the world and the cameras that they would testify under oath before Congress to this. Not an easy thing to do if someone is playing games with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
The follow-up included a substantial amount of press coverage. There were 17 camera crews there, including CNN, ABC Nightline, NBC Dateline, all three of the local networks, CNN, Media One, a number of foreign crews. There have been a number of articles, including some good ones and some bad ones, but mostly good ones, particularly the Washington Times. There were over two dozen meetings on the Hill with different offices in which various witnesses and the company of some of the staff met with staffers. There was some face-to-face with members. There is media ongoing right now in the background as all of this material is being digested. And there's an excellent website which shows everything that was done, which has all the information, which has the web archive. I cannot imagine. Well, first of all, let's make one thing clear. Nothing like this has ever happened in the history of the UFO ET research and activist movement since 47. Nothing even remotely close. Mm. So there have been certainly some political agendas and initiatives in the past. So that's the first thing to say. And the second thing to say is that overall, you take all this together, and it was a tremendous accomplishment. The credit certainly has to go to Greer, who has made this his raison d'etre for nearly 10 years, and without his drive, without his absolute intensity and focus to get things done, possibly stepping on some toes along the way, which is usually what happens when you get into this kind of area, it wouldn't have happened. But ultimately, though, it's not about Greer. It's not about any one individual. It's about the issue. It's about the government's response, the government's lack of response, and, of course, it's about the witnesses who are coming forward. So, again, I think the researchers who over the years have pretty much devoted their time into picking through every aspect of this issue, trying to find a breakthrough or smoking gun, certainly trying to triage it all out. The natural reaction is to try to pick through this and find the things that are wrong with it. Understandable. But from a standpoint of an activist, let me tell you, the anti-war movement could have used, or a lot of the political, or the civil rights movement could have used this kind of focused, comprehensive, web, radio, media-based effort in anything that it did. I just feel that I
think we're getting into
but let me just say that I don't think I can state this any more strongly. I think
okay.
It was a tremendous success, and we're going to see the results of that fairly soon.
I think we're getting into quite a filibuster here.
Yeah, and that's why I'm stopping.
And gentlemen, I've got to take a break here. Dean is making the break sign through the glass at me. When we come back, we'll give Richard Hall and Royce Myers their turn after Steve's filibuster.
I'm practicing for the Senate.
You'll get there yet, Richard.
All right.
We will be back with more of these strange days indeed here on News Talk Radio, CFRB 1010.
Hey, Kenny, what are you doing to my dealership?
I'm digging a 20-foot deep hole in your parking lot. Get it? We dig down deep to bring you super deals.
Forget it, Kenny. People just want a great deal.
At the Ontario Toyota Dealer's Sunny Days event, all you'll get is a great deal. Lease the fun and friendly Echo for $189 a month.
Hello? Anyone?
This is going to be a long night.
The Ontario Toyota Dealer's Sunny Days event. Just great weather, great deals, and great cars. Check your paper for details.
What can you make out of bingo?
Boing, gob, bong, obnig, ibo, nibo. The G is silent.
Actually, you could make dough.
There's no B in dough.
Really big dough.
Oh?
Because when you play Big Dough Bingo at Country Style Donuts, you could win $1 million. Or have a shot at millions of other prizes. Prizes include Yamaha ATVs, Duquesne gas grills, Cuisinart appliances, and Conair spa packages. Big Dough Bingo at Country Style. Details in participating stores.
Jin Bin. Bog Bing. Oh, if I had an L, I could make Goblin.
You're locked into Toronto's News Talk leader, CFRB.
Here I am.
But when it's time for music, tune into the best of the 80s, 90s, and today on Mix 99.9 FM.
FM over here? Let me try it.
Mix 99.9, the best of the 80s, 90s, and today.
Wendy Sittler, wife of Daryl Sittler, talks about her early symptoms of colon cancer. Paul Stewart, NHL referee, talks about how he knew he had colon cancer developing. Get the point? Often, there are no early warnings. Nothing but your own good sense to tell you to ask your doctor.
Timely and thorough testing can prevent colon cancer. Talk to your doctor. Don't die of embarrassment or from the silence.
A message from the station that cares. CFRB 1010.
Strange days. Indeed. That's the name of the program. Looks at UFO phenomena that surround UFOs. My name is Errol Bruce Knapp. On the line with me, Stephen G. Bassett, down there in Washington, D.C., is the only UFO lobbyist down there. Richard Hall, who has been involved in this field since the 50s, I guess, and has done all kinds of remarkable work, written a couple of books. We'll mention those titles in a little while. And someone we haven't heard too much of in the last 20 minutes, Royce J. Myers, who is the UFO watchdog, runs the UFO watchdog website. Should go take a look at that site, UFOWatchdog.com. Richard, do you have any problems with the way that that Greer? I don't see that in what you say in your emails to the list. With the way that the thing was put together, or is it the content of the disclosure project and the press conference that irked you, or was it some of the witnesses? You know,
all of the above.
All of the above?
I'd be glad to get into it, but I really think we ought to let Royce say something here. Let me follow up after him. I'd be glad to do that.
Okay. Royce?
Well, I've just been sitting here listening.
We're having trouble hearing you, Royce.
Well, I've just been sitting here listening, and things are sounding just fine to me.
Uh-huh.
I'm unable to hear him, Richard.
Okay, well, then let me proceed and tell you.
Go ahead.
Reconnect with him. Mm. I have a problem from A to Z with Stephen Greer and his organization based on his entire approach to UFOs, including his selling of, I don't even know the right word for it, group meetings where he charges a price and takes people out in the field and waves flashlights at the sky and claims to call aliens down. The whole assumption of it is rather ludicrous. And I have, over the years, talked with at least four or five people who were actually on these field expeditions that they paid a hefty price to go on and were treated to the spectacle of Greer running around in advance and saying, oh, look, there goes one now, and they don't see anything, and he's trying to create a situation where he tries to convince the people that they're making contact with aliens. And in that connection, there's a wonderful article which I can supply to anybody who contacts me privately from Outside Magazine in September 1994 by a guy who did go, an editor who did go on one of these sessions, and he describes the whole procedure. But then on this particular conference here, they brought up a whole bunch of witnesses, but they didn't bother to vet the witnesses. And some of these guys, as has been brought out on UFO updates, are very shaky. They're possible mental cases, some of them. And I don't want to paint with a broad brush here. As I said at the beginning, there's some very good witnesses mixed in here, some very good, solid witnesses. And I only regret that they have made the mistake of falling into Greer's trap and going into this package deal. They would make good witnesses before Congress, but the first thing that's going to happen, if any staffers pay attention in Congress, is they're going to vet these witnesses, and they're going to find some bad ones and some false ones, and they're going to expose the whole thing, and it's going to just make the whole thing go down the tubes.
Yeah, it's. I get the feeling that a lot of ufologists are upset with the fact that there are some one or two in there that ufologists consider to be shaky, if not flaky.
They're very shaky, very shaky.
And And the concern is, to repeat what Richard said, is that that will drag all of the other witnesses down, most of whom are, you know, apparently credible and good witnesses.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Fine, solid, upstanding citizens. And the whole thing is going to be taken apart once the congressional aides start to look into some of the backgrounds that have been touted by some of these witnesses.
Another thing I'd like to say is that that Stephen Bannon lecture me about activism either, because I've been an activist a lot longer than he has and was involved in the two public hearings and bringing about the two actual congressional hearings that took place in the history of the subject. I can't speak for what has gone on in private in Congress, but the two public hearings were brought about by our efforts. And another severe criticism of what they're up to now is that they package the UFO subject in this thing of opposing space weapons in space and accusing, and this really amazes me, they have the gall to go up there and accuse the government of hiding free energy, that we actually have free energy sources that are being suppressed. So in other words, there's a big political agenda here that UFOs are being wrapped in. We don't need that. We don't need that. UFOs are a serious subject. There are good witnesses. It is a serious matter, but it has nothing to do with whether or not we put weapons in space or this ridiculous charge that free energy sources are being suppressed and withheld from the public. This is part of the political package that they're pressing on Capitol Hill, and that's only going to bring ridicule.
Hmm. Can you respond to that, Steve?
I can, but I'm a little concerned. I want to hear from Royce.
Okay.
I don't know if you can get a better connection for him or whatever, but maybe get another shot here.
We've tried to set that up. Royce, are you with us now?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yes, that's much better.
Good. If he could speak a little louder, I could hear him. It's almost there.
Okay. Can you boost that line a bit?
I'm as close to the phone as I can get.
Okay.
I can barely hear him, but I can hear him. Okay.
Okay. As far as the disclosure project goes, I think that any publicity is good publicity to a point. And I'll have to agree with Richard Hall on a lot of issues here, where you have someone making a lot of very unfounded claims, such as the free energy claim, and you have a guy who basically is the center of the entire disclosure project, who is Stephen Greer, because he's the most publicly known figure who's connected with the project, who has done a lot of really dubious things in the past, such as taking the work of the UFO Coalition and, you know, putting his name on it and selling it, and people are going to look at that. They're always going to look at, well, what has this guy done and what hasn't he done? You know, and everybody makes mistakes. But to repeatedly make mistakes, and I guess the most recent thing that comes to mind with me with disclosure is that I think it was Edgar Mitchell who said that Greer was using his name as a witness, but he stated emphatically, apparently, that no, I'm not a witness for the Disclosure Project at all, and is pretty much disassociated himself. Someone correct me if I'm wrong on that. No?
I think you're pretty much right that Edgar Mitchell didn't want to be associated with it at all and asked for his name to be removed, and apparently it wasn't.
Let me start. I'm going to start with Royce, and then I'll work over to Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Let me first preface. I mean, it's important to note this, that I did attend the press conference in person. I attended the VIP briefing, as it was called, the next night, and I attended the entire all-day situation on Saturday. So I am speaking from firsthand involvement there. But let me start with Royce. First of all, I want to comment. His UFO Watchdog site is a good site.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really providing it's providing a good edgy analysis and view on this. I like it and I use it. I think that some of the stuff he has up there about some of the people is going to prove to be right. I think some of the stuff on some of the people will prove to be wrong. But that's pretty much about the way it is for everybody in this field, one way or another. There's nothing unusual about that. I think the most important issue he raised was Mitchell. Let me address that. Edgar Mitchell, let me make it real clear, that all the people in the Disclosure Project that I have dealt with, and I've dealt with most of them, and including Stephen Greer, and definitely including myself, have nothing but the highest respect for Edgar Mitchell. He is a a hero. He's an important American. He's an historical figure. He's been speaking on this issue for some time, carefully but yet very forcefully. And that's point one. Point two is that within Disclosure Project, the fact is it is understood that Edgar Mitchell, astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, is not a witness in the sense that some of these other people were. He's not a first-hand, this happened to me kind of witness. Gordon Cooper, for instance, would be in that category. Edgar is not. Yes, there's some history there. Given the number of people involved, given the emotional content of this, given the, what's at stake, given the power of this issue, I believe it's not surprising that there's going to be issues between a whole bunch of people as things move forward. It's unavoidable. I think that, as the media covers this, you can never guarantee that the media will, quote, write something exactly the way you want it, and they're going to say things that are going to come out wrong on the other end based upon other people's view of this. That's unavoidable, too. I hope that Dr. Mitchell's issues will be resolved. I hope he gets more comfortable with what's going on, and that's about all I can say about that.
Well, if the guy's not a witness, why even use his name?
I'm sorry, I can't. I'm not really having trouble hearing.
Goose it and then say it again, Royce.
If the guy is not a witness, why even associate his name with it? We just need a bottom line of why.
Could you repeat the question that he just raised?
Yes. Why if Mitchell doesn't want to be involved, why even use his name?
Well, I don't want to speak. I can't speak for the Disclosure Project on that. My personal view is that since Mitchell has spoken on this subject publicly for some time, he has made comments that have been covered on documentaries,
mm-hmm.
so it's on public record, and he was actually associated with this effort going back-wise. It doesn't surprise me that he has turned up in a somewhat limited fashion in some of the documents or in some of the transcripts. But I can say that he was not presented to the press as a witness in the way these other people were, and in fact really was not raised that much. It was seized upon by one of the people that wrote about it. I mean, to me, this is ultimately not that important. I mean, I think this is all going to work itself out in time.
The whole issue was that he was presented by C. Setai as being a supporter of your activities. That's the issue.
I can't speak to that. I did not.
I notice you can't speak to it.
I didn't hear that done. If it was done, then I guess that whoever put it, cast it that way, would have to speak to that.
I can only
say that Edgar is held in very high regard, and that I'm not aware of anybody in any way trying to misuse his reputation.
Stephen Greer.
Now let me speak to let me address what Richard had raised. Probably the most significant point that he's raised is the issue of the political content. First of all, let's understand that as this disclosure thing moves ahead, the political debate is only just beginning. It's going to be one hell of a ride. There's going to be massive debate in this nation over some very significant issues. It's only just begun. So no one should be surprised that the politics is going to get hot and heavy soon. The Disclosure Project made a tactical decision, which I actually didn't agree with initially, and that was to bring in the issue of space weaponization and energy environmental issues, bring it actually sort of inside the project as opposed to a somewhat parallel track in which these other issues are represented by separate entities, proffering, mutual support. It was a risky maneuver. It may very well prove to be a brilliant stroke, and then it may not. I mean, we'll shall see. I mean, there's no guarantees in this. One of the major problems the UFO activists and research movement has had from the beginning is how do you convey to the general public, the 260 million or 75 million Americans, why this issue, beyond simply, gee, are UFOs real or not, should be important to them? Why should they care? Why should they pressure their Congress about it? That has never been easy. And the issue of space weaponization has some pretty significant implications And the issue of environment and energy has some significant implications. And there are certain members of Congress that these issues are important to. By bringing it inside early on, I think they were anticipating being able to make some headway with certain members of either the House and or Senate and might be able to build on that. The risk, of course, and I'm not saying anything isn't obvious here, is that there is a potential significance of potential for polarization, both of the Democratic and the Republican side. Though I can say, this kind of debate about whether the UFO issue as it relates to energy or propulsion systems or weaponization can polarize this or that, whatever, to me, this is the debate long time coming. I mean, we should have had this debate 25 years ago. The fact that it's starting to bubble up is a good thing to me, not a bad thing.
Richard.
I listened carefully to what Mr. Bassett said about seeming rationale for including space weaponry and free energy in the mix, and I didn't understand a word of what he said. I think he would make a good presidential press secretary.
I think what I heard, Richard, was that that Greer felt that bringing in the free energy and space defense that would perhaps encourage some of the members of Congress who were interested in those subjects might be more inclined to climb in on this. Did I get the right end of that stick, Steve?
Well, let me clarify a little bit. First of all, let's talk on the weaponization issue. The weaponization of space is an absolute legitimate issue.
It is a legitimate issue, but it has nothing to do with UFOs.
Well, in that, I think it's fair to say that if you read the witness testimony itself of the 70 that were included in the initial run, there is specific testimony repeatedly in at least a dozen or more cases which has bearing on the issue of the relationship between the presence of extraterrestrials and our defense operations as well as our space operations. And so if the testimony is to be believed, there is a connection. The other point I want to make is that free energy is phrases that has a lot of baggage associated with it. Free energy is not a word that was used in the press conference, I don't believe, and that's not the way it's couched. It's basically along these lines. There's testimony that retrieved craft have come into the possession of the government. No one, I think, on a basis of common sense, would claim that the craft that have been viewed and recorded for years are operating under conventional Earth-based type technology. It's using something beyond what we currently know, even well beyond what we know. Within the physical world, you're going to move or to propel. You've got to have an energy source.
Your implication in these meetings was that the government is deliberately suppressing from public knowledge free energy sources that would revolutionize our lives and change the world.
That's absolutely true. That's the implication.
I believe it's true,
Richard. I think the government's been suppressing. Hell, the government's been suppressing stuff for a long time, and you can't go 3 months in a news cycle and have something not emerge that the government hasn't suppressed, and we're just finding out about.
There's nothing new about the government suppressing information, of course. But it doesn't support your particular views necessarily.
Yeah, I hear Royce trying to climb in there. Do you want to crank that a bit, Dean? Go ahead, Royce.
Yeah, implying something and proving it are two different things. And especially when you want to sit here and hop on the electrical, you know, the current energy crisis, and you want to kind of throw in free energy and space weaponry, which is definitely a topic now, into the basket, maybe to grab some people's attentions, and you want to make implications you can't prove. Well, that's going to cast a chilled shadow on the bottom line here. Are we going to have congressional hearings about UFOs? What's it going to take to get that done? Are your witnesses credible? I mean, was there even a background investigation done into the witnesses at all? I mean, and I'm not talking, you know, maybe going to Ohio and getting some military records and looking through them and this and that. I mean, a really thorough background investigation done on the witnesses.
Did you catch that, Steve?
I didn't. You're going to have to paraphrase it for me.
Okay. Was a background check done on the witnesses? I'm just going for the last thing that Royce asked.
Really clear here that I'm not trying to, you know, trumpet my own horn because of some of my dislikes for certain people in the field and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think disclosure is fine. It's just the manner it's being done in and the way that it's being presented and the credibility of the people who are up there making some pretty spectacular claims.
Did you catch any of that, Stephen?
No.
The credibility of some of the people that were up there at the press conference and making claims, I think, is what Royce is trying to say.
Yeah. Well, there's 2 points here. This issue of credibility is one of the great, what's the phrase I'm looking for? It's one of those words bugbear.
Bugaboo.
Bugaboo, yeah. Bugaboo that has plagued the field for a very long time. This is one of the reasons we have this problem is that, and this is true of any situation where a government is propagandizing an issue. In other words, when a government interferes with the free flow of information, when it withholds information, when it withholds the truth, when it subverts, or when it just prints outright lies, which we have seen countless examples of this last century alone, whenever it does that, it creates all kinds of problems with assessing the issue, the facts, the people involved, and it also kind of puts a glass ceiling over it, and so it turns everybody inward. And so instead of trying to focus on triaging forward and moving toward, you know, understanding good policy, you end up kind of an incestuous feeding thing where everybody feeds on each other and is looking for this and that. That's a problem. Credibility is an issue, but ultimately not the issue. There is a fundamental gestalt going on here. If you've got 70 people or 100 people that are willing to go on record, they're willing to go on paper, they're willing to go in front of cameras, they're willing even to testify before Congress, that fact alone, and when these people are carrying with them obvious pedigrees of military service and so forth, that is incredibly powerful, and I can tell you it's going to have an impact on Congress.
Yeah,
and
but
the
what Royce is getting at, Steve, is that there are one or two people, in fact, two people that I know for sure, you know, who have a real lack of credibility as far as the, you know, the rest of the field is concerned, who are going to get looked at. They've made some fairly outrageous claims, and they're going to be put under the microscope, and those two guys are going to bring all the other witnesses down.
I disagree. I don't think that's going to happen. First of all, it's not a matter of people being put under a microscope. What I'm seeing in the media right now, and I think the same thing is happening on the Hill, is that it's going to be just the opposite. They're going to seize on those individuals who clearly have a very strong background and pedigree.
Mm-mm.
And a strong resume, and they're going to say, wait a minute.
No, Stephen, listen, all through history, it has always been, the inclination is to go for the lowest common denominator, and background checks are going to be run on all of these people, and there will be two that stand out like sore thumbs, and they'll go, aha, and that's what they'll pounce on. And that's everybody's concern.
I think he's displaying naivete about what goes on in Congress again, which is another very troublesome matter here. The first thing that staffers are going to do is vet witnesses. They're going to check into them, and when they find more than one, two, three, four that begin not checking out, you know, that's going to destroy the whole effort. Absolutely.
We have to agree to disagree here. I think maybe this was true 20 years ago or 30 years ago. One of the things you have to understand is we're in a different ball game now. We're at a different place.
I'm not living in the past, sir. I know what's going on.
I think that we just have to agree to disagree. If one or two of the 70 witnesses currently in play, and by the way, there are more coming. I mean, this is only just starting. Prove to be a real problem, right? What will be said about them is, okay, they came to Washington, D.C. They went in front of the press. They said into a camera, I'm telling you the truth, and I'll say the same thing under oath. It turned out that there were serious problems. That's unfortunate. Put them aside. Let's deal with the other 59, 72, or whatever.
That ain't the way the world works, sir.
I think it will in this case. And I don't think there's much to be gained by, you know, what concerns me, Richard, is that there's an enormous amount of effort that's gone on here. Money has been spent, huge amounts of of time on the part of a lot of people, almost all volunteer. What does it serve for the long-time researchers in the field, such as yourself, who have done so much and accomplished so much, to assume a priori that, quote, a couple of bad witnesses is going to bring the whole thing down?
It's more than that.
What is the upside to that? I mean, you're basically saying all of the good part of it needs to be thrown out to be replaced by what? Where is the other disclosure movement that has, quote, absolutely pristine, pure witnesses associated with it, has done all this work, and is there confronting Congress? It's not there.
Well, I'm glad that people are out there doing the work. I'm glad it's getting done. I have no qualms about people getting some much-needed attention on this subject. What I have qualms about is people that want to engage in research and present witnesses without doing any background investigation on them. And that's what I'm getting here, that hasn't taken place with these witnesses. So my bottom-line question here, and it's real simple, yes or no, were background checks, thorough background checks done on all the witnesses? And again, I'm not trying to bring down Disclosure Project or Stephen Greer or anything else. I'm just raising a valid point that people are going to look at, because if you get five or six bad apples out of that group of witnesses, it's not going to matter how many good guys you have. They're going to go, why didn't you guys tell us about this? And you're going to wind up pissing off a lot of congressional aides and a lot of congressmen and a lot of other important people on Capitol Hill, because if they step up to the plate with this and they find out later and realize that these people are not who they claim to be and they wind up looking like a bunch of asses, it's going to burn everybody in ufology, period.
Did you catch that, Stephen?
I caught that.
Good.
All I can say, Royce, is this. I think the cost of fully doing a FBI-level background check on 70 witnesses would probably run to $1 million.
You don't have to do it to that degree. All you have to do is do routine checking, as we do. How do we know that these people are not reliable? Just through listening to their stories and doing a little routine checking. You don't need an FBI expensive investigation. You just need some common sense and some critical faculties.
Well, I'm not saying that, first of all, a lot of these witnesses have been around for a while, and I'm not saying that there wasn't some checking done on these people. I'm not saying that. I think that Royce is going beyond, quote, common sense and routine this. He's talking about a significant vetting process that you would do that would find out and root out any and all issues that might raise a credibility issue. And again, let's get back to the fundamental issue here. We're not going to agree on it tonight, but when you've got people like Grant Bethune and Duane Arneson and Robert Jacobs and other members of the military clearly have documented records of their careers coming forward and making statements like that, and you're saying, and we'll throw in Mitchell's statements, which I think are very important, as well as Cooper's and others, you're saying that if they find one bad apple, they're just, oh, well, these other people are just, we must throw this all out. We're going to throw that all out because we found a bad apple. That defies common sense. Now, I'm not saying that approach might not have happened 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, there you go again.
But the government management
30, 40 years ago business. The whole thing is that you're also packaging this, not only not vetting witnesses, you're also packaging it in a political agenda with free energy and space weaponry and all that stuff, which turns congressmen off. It's not going to interest them. Plus, when they start looking into Stephen Greer's pseudoscientific activities in CSETI, in these field expeditions, where he waves flashlights and claims to bring down aliens, and he doesn't even bother to make a technical report at all on any of this. You know, that's just pseudoscience. That's what it is. Now, you take this package together, and what have you got?
Yeah.
Pseudoscientific activity, a political agenda, careless treatment of witnesses.
An email here from Dave Frelott. Does Stephen Bassett believe that the end justifies the means? In other words, if we get disclosure because of Greer's actions, is that going to satisfy everyone, or does the person who brings it about have to be a perfect individual?
Disclosure will come about. Disclosure's ultimately got to come about through government action. It's got to come about through congressional hearing,
mm-hmm.
not about Greer. The act of disclosure itself is a process of fact-finding and vetting through the congressional fact-finding methods, through the hearing process, which will eventually engage the public, the media, and the executive branch. It will involve culling out of material out of the military-industrial complex. It is, and that process is huge. It will go on for months. It transcends Stephen Greer. He is an activist. He's out there, fine and dandy. The old guard can debate Stephen Greer, and he said he till the cows come home. The point is, this issue is engaged. It's moving forward. Let me make a point. 2 years ago, I spoke to the MUFON board, most of the board. They were in town for the symposium. And I said to them, I said, look, MUFON, form a political wing to MUFON. Get somebody, let me register as a lobbyist for you. Form a political wing. Start soliciting members on that basis. You can increase your membership tenfold. Get involved. I would say the same thing to FUFOR. I would say the same thing to KUFOS. They formed an alliance of sort. Form a political wing. Get out there and start driving this process as well, because if they don't do that, if they remain in the background, basically waiting for, again, that perfect person or the perfect process, this is going to move ahead and leave them behind. And we need a broad-based political front coming out of the totality of the UFO community. If that were to occur, these issues over style and substance of, say, a single person like Greer would be less important.
And we're talking Mutual UFO Network, the Center for UFO Studies, and the Fund for UFO Research, the initials that Stephen ran off like words there. gentlemen, Royce, Richard?
Yes. I would like to say that, first of all, there were more false assumptions in there about what's been going on. And in the first place, the Fund for UFO Research is strictly a fundraising and granting organization. It does not get into political things, but we have sponsored and participated in talking for years in privately meeting with and briefing members of Congress and their staffs. So the assumption that we haven't been doing anything is nonsense. Mr. Bass is apparently totally unaware of that. We've had some very detailed briefing documents, one of which Stephen Greer ripped off on us a few years ago, to the point we had to take legal action against him in 1997 for claiming some of our material as his own. But that's just another sign of the problems with Stephen Greer. But the assumption that UFO groups are not doing anything in this line is absolutely false. We have been trying very hard, but we don't, the end doesn't justify the means to us, and we don't cut corners, and we don't engage in dishonest activities.
And correct me if I'm wrong, was it not QFOS that got late Governor Schiff?
Speak up a bit, please, Royce.
Was it not QFOS that was key in getting the GOA to look into Roswell?
Richard?
I can't hear. I didn't hear what he said.
Was it not QFOS that that instigated Congressman Stephen Schiff looking into Roswell?
I think that was probably a joint effort by all of us that did that, and I was in Stephen Schiff's office myself personally, along with, I think that was the UFO Research Coalition as a group that did that. Because I remember being in the office with him, with John Schussler and Walt Andrus and others.
Of the Mutual UFO Network, yeah.
I mean, to sit here and say that there aren't groups that are, you know, that C. City and Greer are the only people involved in taking any action is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case at all. Definitely not, as is evident by the partnership that was formed a couple of years ago that went sour because of one person's need to plagiarize everybody else's work. That's ridiculous. And again, you know, I really need to get back to this, to the witnesses, that if you got some guy who says, yeah, you know, I was in military intelligence, and, you know, I helped recover downed alien spacecraft, and it turns out he's a potato peeler, you're going to have huge problems.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. And, of course, there is no one perfect person to represent, you know, the entire organization, you know, to represent ufology as a whole or to lead the charge. You know, there is no, let's say, messiah or whatever else you want to use, you know. But what I think there should be is someone who is going to use, and, you know, Stephen brought up this word a lot, common sense, and it makes a lot of sense to me to make sure that your witnesses are valid and that they're credible and they're not full of it, like a lot of people in ufology are.
Mm-hmm. I think that we may have reached the end of the discussion on this, or as far as we can go tonight. Richard, do you have anything further that you'd like to add?
Not particularly.
Okay. Stephen, I know you're never, you know, you're an eloquent man.
Never at a loss of words, right, Errol?
Never lost for words the way I often am as your host.
I would, XPAC, which is the Political Action Committee, I would love to have XPAC and MUFON and KUFOS and VU4, unless VU4 again doesn't touch this, whatever. I'd love to have the four of them, and I would be happy to do all of the front end loading legwork, but I'd love to have the four of them host a political summit in Washington, D.C., in which a relatively strong representation of people in the field that have political interest on this. In other words, they're not, they want to do more than just go up, look in the sky and see what's up there, go look at a mutilated, you know, cow. They want to see political action and results. They want to see the government engaged. Mm. Have a summit, bring them in, everything on the table. Nobody is running the show per se. Everybody's equal footing. Sit down and really flesh this stuff out and see if there is a broader-based political front that can be put on this that addresses everybody's concerns and really draws on this huge reservoir of public interest. Remember, one of the reasons the UFO issue has the potential to make political change significant, create significant political change, is that unlike a number of issues, it has tens and tens of millions of interested people behind it. Take Echelon. Echelon is a major scandal, but you can't find one person in 100 on the street knows what you're talking about. They have no idea what Echelon is. But when you talk about the UFO cover-up, believe me, tens of millions of people there. That is a huge political resource that could be drawn on, but it's going to require concerted coalitional effort. So, again, I'd love to do that. XPAC would be happy to spear that and join sponsor, whatever. These are the kinds of things I think that need to happen. They need to happen soon because this issue, based upon where I'm sitting in Washington, is moving forward. It is being engaged. And if it starts to happen, if disclosure starts to unfold, unless the public has got a very strong dog in the fight here, we don't have some strong political front, the government's going to dictate everything. They're going to dictate the disclosure process, what's said, what's not said. They're going to clamp secrecy back down. They're going to screw with us some more because they've been screwing with us for years and getting away with it. So why not do some more? Unless we stand up and stop it.
Gentlemen, thank you, Stephen, for your time. Richard, thank you for yours. I we're not going to resolve anything tonight, but it's something that Stephen just said we should pick up on and perhaps spend some time together and see if we can perhaps bring in a second column on this, Richard.
Of course, we are working on this on UFO Update on a regular basis.
Yes. And we shall continue to do that until something gets done. Okay, both of you, thank you. Royce, I'd like you to hang in for 10 more minutes if you can do that. There's a couple of things that we need to talk about on the radio.
Sure.
Okay, Richard and Steve, thank you very much for your points of view tonight.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
And I'm sure the audience did too. It gets to be pretty puzzling, all of this UFO stuff, and it's interesting to hear the political side of things as well as the mysterious, I think. To both of you, thank you. Richard Hall's website, hallrichard.com, and at www.paradigmclock.com for Stephen G. Bassett. Royce, some interesting things going on as far as the Reed Wraith hoax. This is the guy who was out somewhere, apparently an alien attacked his dog. He shot the alien. He took it home, stuck it in a freezer. Man in Black came. There was all kinds of hassle about it, and it turns out that it's a hoax.
The biggest, this is just so ridiculous, and just like the little Energizer bunny rabbit in the commercials, the beat goes on.
Mm-hmm.
these guys just don't know when to quit.
They've pretty much milked North America as far as North America is prepared to put up with their stories, right?
Yeah, I think they've been pretty much exposed here in the United States. And now what they've done is they've latched on to Mexico's Jaime Musan. And for people that may not know Jaime, he is considered Mexico's premier UFO investigator, quote-unquote.
Also, is that the guy that's the host of the Mexican equivalent of 60 Minutes, or that's what they tout it as?
That's what they tout him as. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, apparently Mr. Masson has latched on to Jonathan Reed and his band of UFO clowns, and they are now down in Latin America selling their hoax. Apparently they state that they were in Tijuana, and they gave four presentations down there, and that the presentations, each of the four were attended by 1,000 people, and they're saying that Latin America is just eating this thing up. But unfortunately, I have a lot of people down in Mexico that are involved in ufology. I think this is just ridiculous. They cannot believe that Jaime Musan was suckered into presenting this as the real deal. A lot of people can't believe that Jaime Musan got suckered into this thing. I was just totally amazed. I talked to Jaime Musan back in 1996 when I was down in Los Angeles, and he seemed like a very genuine and sincere guy. Maybe he was a little too sincere. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, I don't want to sit here and slap someone that I can't talk to.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, their big deal is that they want to sell this thing on emotion. And this is something that Dan Iaria, who is this big Jonathan Reed supporter, who has a website for the guy, and he'll make arguments against all of the evidence that just clearly proves that this guy is a complete fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, quote, "We need emotion to make this thing happen. Scientific sanitation and political complacency will never suffice." Well, yeah, that's good and all, and the reason that you need emotion is that, well, if you prove someone wrong with evidence, well, what better thing to get them going than to play on their emotions a little bit and to make them feel inspired or grief-stricken or whatever else. It's just ridiculous. These guys go on and on and on. Now, the thing that pretty much put the nail in the coffin, besides Reed's bogus credentials and finding out that this guy named Dr. Harold Chacon, who allegedly had done a DNA analysis of some of these alien tissue and blood, turned out not to be a doctor at all, but he turned out to be working at a gas station / mini mart as a clerk.
In Seattle.
Mm-hmm. This guy had supposedly been beat up and had to leave the country and all this. Well, he's been in Seattle for at least the last 4 years. So, and also Jonathan Reed's author for his book, Robert Wraith, whose real name is Robert Area, apparently works at the same gas station, and their big thing was, oh yeah, we just kind of heard about Art Bell in passing, but apparently Robert Area, a.k.a. Robert Wraith, is a huge Art Bell fan and has been for a number of years, and I get this from people that know the guy personally.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing was put in the bucket, but apparently it's crawled out.
And south of your border and headed for Point South. Where
its own volition has just crawled on out and is going on down and trying to rip off people down in Latin America now. But I don't think that's going to happen for very much longer.
Mm. Mm. Anything else going on in the couple of moments we have left, Royce?
Not too much. You know, I want to emphasize about the disclosure project. You know that I don't have all the answers. Stephen Greer doesn't have all the answers.
No, nobody.
You know,
yeah.
I think that these discussions are going to bring out a lot of points that need to be addressed about what really needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And that's a thing that has frustrated me as far as the media is concerned. Is, I mean, yeah, we get some nice documentaries from TLC, but nobody talks about the hoaxes. Nobody talks about the in the field. Nobody talks, publicly. We don't talk about the hoaxes, and we don't talk about the politics of all of this stuff, internal politics. And you know, it's there's enough of a mystery out there without us getting immersed in our own internal mysteries.
Right. I'm kind of a nuts and bolts guy, and I like bottom lining things.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad that Stephen came on the program. I'm glad that we were able to engage in the discussion that we had.
But Stephen isn't Greer, and
exactly.
You know, Stephen would just as happy to be on our side, working with us as working with Greer. But Greer is what's going on at the moment.
Exactly, and it's unfortunate too. It really is, because I really feel that the guy, in my opinion, has just ruined a lot of anything even close to disclosure with his claims of, you know, extraterrestrial bases being attacked by the military down in Colorado and so on.
Royce, we have to wrap it up. Thank you very much indeed for your time tonight. And again, Royce's website, go take a look. There's a lot of interesting stuff there, is www.ufowatchdog.com. Good night, Royce.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you. Joining me on the line for the final 20 or 25 minutes of this program, Dave Furlott, our regular weekly contributor. Dave, good evening. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Harold.
Well, an interesting 90 minutes, huh?
It was extremely interesting.
Yeah, and unfortunately, John Velez emailed me a question, and you can too if you like. Email sdi@cfrb.com. He wanted me to ask the gentleman, where do we go from here? What kind of action can individuals take to help get government disclosure? And of course, I noticed that in the news break, because I'm always switching back and forth between screens here. So, you know, looking at people's websites and things. You'll have to ask them, John.
Yeah, send them an email.
What you been looking at this week, Dave?
Well, you guys touched on it a little earlier, but I don't think we've gone into it enough. And basically, it's enough of a problem that I'm really a little annoyed with this one.
Getting slightly steamed, are we?
Oh, just a smidge.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when average people get caught telling a tall tale, they get a little red-faced, and they do their very best to move the attention onto something else so they can get out of the spotlight. Jonathan Reed, Robert Wraith, and Dan Iaria are doing their very best to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are anything but average. Now, for those of you who are not completely familiar with the story, it all began when Jonathan Reed and Robert Wraith appeared on the nationally syndicated radio show Coast to Coast AM with Arth Bell. The two men spun their tale of how Mr. Reed claimed to have been hiking in the woods of Washington State when his dog was disintegrated by an alien. Remember those old UFO flicks of the 50s with the deadly ray guns? Well, this supposedly enraged Mr. Reed enough that without a thought, regardless of his particular health, he claimed to have picked up a tree branch and bashed the alien's skull in. Well, obviously, the alien forgot to recharge the batteries in his ray gun before he came to Earth. He then claimed to have videotaped and photographed a UFO that appeared in the woods nearby, and then says he took the alien home, where, of course, what do you do with a dead alien? You stuff it in a freezer. Well, I suspect the other aliens in the ship were so scared of Mr. Reed's prowess with a tree branch, they decided to sneak off. Either that, or they only had one ray gun between them. But it gets better. The alien miraculously comes back to life. Oh, and get this. Those aliens are such a nice bunch of people, unless you're a dog, that he forgave Mr. Reed for bashing his head in with a tree branch and gave him a nice shiny alien artifact to show his friends. Well, unfortunately, Mr. Reed doesn't want to show us this for close examination because he's afraid the government is going to come out and take it away from him. So he has it hidden safely away. But like the Ginsu knives, there's even more. Mr. Reed further claims that he has been in telepathic contact with the alien that he calls Freddy. Wonder what they think about. Maybe new ways to sell the story? He also claims to have been shot at point-blank range in a botched kidnapping by government thugs. Claims to have had an implant removed from one of his teeth that had been placed there by the government. He also claims that they actually did succeed at one point in kidnapping him, and they drugged and nearly beat him to death. I wonder if they still use tree branches. Anyway, the government agents are still after him. Supposedly, they were using a very sophisticated tracking device that they had placed inside one of his teeth. I wonder how he found out about that. Anyway, now, although Mr. Reed lives in constant fear for his life and is always in hiding, he still takes time out to do lectures. Well, he did pull the tracking device out, so he has to let the government thugs know where he is somehow. What a brave individual. The Reed and Wraith show is like a thin veneer that, when scratched too deeply, shows the real cheap wood underneath. Now, let's begin with Mr. Reed's background. He claims to have worked with the former director of pediatrics at Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Frank Oskey, in 1979. Well, the reality is that Dr. Frank Oskey wasn't even at Johns Hopkins until 1985. Oops. Now, Reed stated that he attended UCLA starting in 76 and obtained a Ph.D. in psychology from the same institution in 1980. Unfortunately for Mr. Reed, an assistant registrar by the name of Mr. Clifford Ramirez conducted a search and stated that he could find no record of this Jonathan Reed ever attending UCLA. And Dina Chertoff of UCLA's Department on Psychology stated, "I have no record of this person." Guess they just lost the records or had them misplaced. Well, not a problem, though, because in order to get a Ph.D., you have to formally file a dissertation. All of those are kept on file. But when a search was done for Mr. Reed's, you guessed it, just couldn't seem to be found anywhere. Maybe it's just a tough name to spell. R-E-E-D. Now, enter Dan Iaria to the rescue. He insists Reed is telling the truth. Iaria claims a group which he refers to as the Dark Side have successfully erased Reed's identity and any trace of his existence. Gee, how convenient. But it gets better still. Joining Mr. Reed and company is a Dr. Harold Chacon, who does some testing on the alien artifact for Mr. Reed and confirms that it is not of this earth. But only one tiny little problem here. Dr. Chacon supposedly was assaulted and fled the country in fear of his life. But lo and behold, Mr. Harold Chacon has been found alive and well and working as a clerk at a mini-mart in West Seattle for the last 4 years. Damn, that's one tough employment market when doctors are only able to find mini-mart clerk jobs. But not to worry. His secret is safe, though, because Mr. Wraith, who wrote Mr. Reed's book, is working right beside Mr. Chacon and protecting him from the further assaults by government thugs. Now, remember that tracking device that I talked about Mr. Reed finding in one of his teeth? Well, Mr. Iaria did an analysis of that and found that it was a very sophisticated transponder that can be activated by microwave transmissions. Maybe like the kind that would come from a microwave oven in a Seattle mini-mart? Oh, by the way, if anyone wants their very own government tooth tracking device, go down to your local Radio Shack and pick up a 1N4001 glass diode. Now, although I wish I could take credit for exposing Reed, Wraith, Iaria, and Chacon for trying to make a mockery of UFOs, I cannot. Most of the information has been carefully hunted down by UFOWatchdog.com. And if you really want the total story about Reed and Wraith, go check it out. The reason I'm so incensed about all this is that they simply refuse to quit the charade and have reported as of June 8th, or yesterday, that they have been holding some very successful conferences in Mexico. In other words, we can't fool them here, so we'll try and fool them there. Things like Reed and Wraith show make me angry, because there is enough real information in the UFO phenomenon to keep us all occupied without having to try and pass off fiction as the real thing. But that's just my take on it.
And a good take it is, too. That's Dave Furlott, ladies and gentlemen, the first guy on our block to have published e-books, Contract for Deceit. What's the second one called, Dave?
Common Foe.
Common Foe. You can go pick them up. They're real inexpensive, like a couple of bucks. www.vangoachbooks.com. That's www.vangoachbooks.com. Dave, I just want to slip Greg in here. He's been waiting a few moments. Good evening, Greg, and welcome to the program on CFRB 1010.
Hello,
good
how
evening,
are you doing?
Good. Hello. Good. How's you?
Oh, pretty good.
Good.
No, I didn't even know I was going to go on the air there. But anyways, I just wanted to get that website again for the CFRB,
because I was going to email you something.
Oh, you mean the email address?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's SDI.
Yeah, and I did that, and some guy up in Illinois came up there.
Oh, we're getting confused here. You're looking for a website, right?
No, the CFRB website for you.
Oh, the CFRB website for me. Well, CFRB.com is where you go.
Oh, okay. Okay,
and if you look at the program grid there, or who's on air right now, and then click on that, that'll pop up a...
Okay. Anyways, what I was going to email you about
is,
okay, I've been listening to you guys for a long time there, ever since you've been on there.
Right.
It's the first time I ever phoned in. But I was watching Sightings, the TV show Sightings one time.
Uh-huh.
And I seen it once, and nothing was ever mentioned about it. There was a Japanese, I believe it was a Japanese film crew that was doing a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And this object appeared.
Oh, that was that in the countryside somewhere?
I believe there was a lot of Japanese people around there.
Oh, then
filmed in Japan, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera went right on the object, and it was going all over the place. Do you remember that at all?
I remember a British one. That's the one I thought you might be referring to. I don't recall seeing Japanese.
No, this was Japanese.
Mm. No, I don't. I haven't seen that one, Greg.
Yeah, it was excellent. Mm-hmm. If you can get your hands on that, it's something to watch, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a lot of that kind of stuff going on, you know. It seems, I guess with the proliferation of the video cameras now and the digital still cameras, there are more and more images that puzzle us more and more. I think
exactly. This thing was just about the film crew.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
Yeah.
If you can get a hold, I believe it was on Sightings, but...
Well, if I can get a hold of it, I'll play it on the radio here, okay?
Yeah. Like they're all going, what's that? It was something else.
Thanks for your call, Greg.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, then. Good night. Good night. And I want to go, because our old lovely up there in Sudbury, Michel Deschamps.
Has been waiting forever, probably.
Yeah, and there he goes. That's the button pushed. Michel.
Yeah.
The Mutual UFO Network's Sudbury section director, Michel Deschamps, joins us from his home in Sudbury.
Yeah, I haven't waited long. I just got on just now.
Oh, okay.
Well, good.
Hello, Michelle.
Let's put you on hold again for another 5 minutes. I can do that.
Oh, I could always wait till 5, too. Sightings was really good. I kind of wish that they had kept on going because I really like Tim White as a host of that show.
Uh-huh.
And I've got 9 tapes full of just the UFO segments.
Oh, really?
But I did miss some of the latter ones before.
Are you familiar with the sequence that Greg was talking about?
If it was near the end, it was probably at the same time where Sightings left Fox to go to the American Space Channel.
Yeah, right.
And I've missed a few since then. I don't think the show is still
Sci-fi
on.
Sci-fi Channel, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they still have their website up. And I've got their CD-ROM, which is really, really good as a UFOpedia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was just lucky to find it in the store locally here. And,
Ooh.
I might actually burn some copies for my friends because it's really cool.
There's more than 10 people listen to this program.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, with information, I think it's good to make money, but I think that in itself is our undoing because a lot of times the information doesn't go out as much as people have to pay for it or pay exorbitant amounts to get it.
Uh-huh.
To get the amount, to get the information, because with the disclosure thing, I agree with what Richard Hall said about Stephen Greer wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I agree with Steve Bassett about the fact that it should be done.
Somebody's doing something, right?
And the thing is, I don't think it should be we should just be laying low now. Now that this one presentation was done, I think there should be several presentations, just keep pushing and having more presentations, because if this one is one in a long time coming and the next one doesn't come till 2-3 years from now, it won't bring the point across. It has to... it's like me going to, you know, Laurentian University and looking through newspapers. The motivation's not always there, but I have to stick to it. Otherwise, nothing gets done.
So you want to hit him and hit him hard and hit him again and hit him hard again and keep on hitting him until they take notice.
It's as stupid as it may sound, it's exactly what has to be done.
Yeah.
Because we're, like Steve Bassett said, we're not 40, 50 years ago. It's 2001. You know, shuttles are going off almost every second week. You know, we're exploring the outer planets. Mm-hmm. And beyond, you know, Pioneer 10 is way out there, and so is Voyager 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, to me, it's just arrogant, ludicrous to think that, you know, maybe we, you know, in our small human minds, we just think we can't do anything about this, and the government's got all the power, and they'll keep covering it up until you and I have long gone, which, you know, it's definitely looking like that still.
I don't think we have to take it that the guys have stopped. Like, Stephen Greer has started this one thing in the go,
yeah.
But by the same token, it's still going even further.
Yeah.
You know, like, Stephen Bassett is out there.
Yeah.
And he's peeping in the congressman's face.
Yeah, and he's willing to work with anybody who wants to contribute.
Yeah, and I think the problem why, I don't think it's jealousy. I know Stephen Greer, with his background, which he said, I know for a fact myself, I wouldn't go out expecting, you know, you don't force UFOs to come down and land in front of you, and then you have boarding party number 1, 2, and 3 get it ready to go on.
Well,
that's like inviting a bunch of wild chimps on board the space shuttle.
Mm.
You know, you they wouldn't do that. The aliens are smarter than that. They wouldn't allow us to just go on for a joyride, just like that Mountain Dew commercial. The thing is, maybe nobody else wanted to venture forward as the guy to organize this thing.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see Stan Friedman be up on that podium instead of Stephen Greer
or
Richard Hall or,
yeah,
you know.
Or Ted Phillips or mm-hmm. Chris Rutkowski.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a whole slew of people
exactly.
Who are much more credible in the eyes of the field than Stephen Greer. But, you know, grudgingly at the same time, well, he put it together. He did it.
Yeah,
that's right.
And now maybe they can just follow the same model and perhaps have a different host, but sort of continue, you know, with the trend.
Yes.
Because there are other people that apparently were videotaped, and there's nothing better than... there's been a lot of civilians that have had sightings, like somebody made reference to that in the media that were asking questions near the very end of that disclosure thing.
Right.
But I think it is a really good point to focus mostly on military people, government people, you know, and the former, former government people and military people that know what the hell's going on.
Yeah,
or
can say with authority, I don't know what the hell it was.
Yeah, and I think Robert Dean once said that too, that there would be a lot more of them that would come out
mm-hmm.
if they were giving total immunity from prosecution because of violating their oath of secrecy.
Yeah.
Well,
you'd see a whole bunch of them won't come right out of the woodwork. I'd be willing to bet my life on that.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of what Stephen Greer was promising at the conference was the fact that, you know, they were willing to support these people and to make sure that they weren't prosecuted.
Yeah. I'm just a little bit disappointed that the media didn't cover it as much. I plan to write an article for the local papers because a lot of them may not be aware, and I think this thing is posted on the net for another 6 months, five months.
Yeah, yeah.
So and we're going to try and do something about that here locally.
The real media files are there for people to go look at, too. And that address, again, is www.disclosureproject.org.
Yeah, big key there is org.
Org.org. Disclosure Project, it's all one word, or Disclosure Project. DisclosureProject.org.
Now, before I let you go, I sent you a list of my personal favorite websites.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I sent you an email. So there's it includes the Ted Phillips website, the
mm-hmm.
Canadian Crop Circle website, Busty Taylor's Crop Circle website, Earth Files.
Okay.
And National UFO Reporting Center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all there.
Okay, I'll pass it on to Mike for
or anybody
you.
Who wants it.
Okay, thanks, Michelle.
You know, good night, Dave.
Good night, Michelle.
Good night, I'll keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy your summer.
Oh, I'm trying.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Well, click, click, click. Let's try it. There we go. That long-distance button is kind of a sticky one. But it works good now.
A little WD-40, never heard.
Well, I don't know. You can't do that to electronics in a very big radio station. Well, you could, I suppose.
Well, you could.
Probably wouldn't stay there very long, but you could do it. Yeah. So that's just about all of our time for tonight. Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? It's I thought it would be a slightly more fireworky, that 90 minutes that we spent with Bassett and Dick Hall and Royce.
I thought it was pretty good, actually.
Yeah? Did it have enough edge for you?
I think so. Mm. I mean, you know, there was enough controversy going on between the three of them. And the nice thing, too, was that Royce J. Myers, is just... The gentleman he has a good balance.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically he worked out as a very good balance between the two.
Well, he has a degree in criminalistics.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Didn't go too much into the background before things started because I just wanted to get right to it. But,
yeah.
But regular listeners would know that Royce and Richard Hall and Bassett know their backgrounds to a degree anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there. I'm not apologizing anymore.
What's to apologize for? It was a great show.
Hell, I don't know. It's the end of the night. Maybe I should apologize for something. I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to apologize. By the way, too, on with this Jonathan Reed and the boys,
yeah,
I decided, you know, like, I got the background on them, and I know the story and the whole bit, mm-hmm. but I decided that I was going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
So I went and visited their sites.
Uh-huh. Stinky?
The sites are quite well made.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, like Dan Iaria's site
mm-hmm.
is supposedly showing still images of what he claims are the alien eye blinking,
mm-hmm.
right? And you look at these things, and I mean, you don't have to be a genius to figure out basically all he's done is really sort of move, taking the one thing and move the image around a little bit. Done a little rotating and stuff. I mean, it's so bad.
It's stinky.
Oh, it's amazing.
Dave, got to get out of here.
Yep.
Thank you. Next week, 10:30-ish, or 20 after 10. Yeah, good.
Okay.
Dave Furlott, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Dave. Good take on it tonight. That's this week's look at Strange Days Indeed. You can email us. The address is sdi@cfrb.com. Thanks to Dean out there in the control room. Strange Days Indeed is copyright of and co-produced by WT Fit and Random Records. The executive producer, Gene Mascadelli. Thanks to everybody who's on the program tonight. Thank you for listening, and your numbers grow. Strange Days Indeed. CFRB 1010. Good night. Radio.